Case number 12-1158, Southwest Power Pool, Inc. Petitioner v. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Spector for the petitioner, Ms. Banta for the respondent, Mr. Teichler for the intervener.
I hope you won't take it personally that everybody left. You shouldn't treat that as an indication of the importance of your case.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. This is a case that should have been a rather mundane contract interpretation case where there were two litigants before FERC, the Midwest ISO, sometimes called MISO, and the Southwest Power Pool, sometimes called SPP, who had a dispute over the meaning of an ambiguous contract clause in a joint operating agreement between the two parties. FERC simply had to resolve the controversy and interpret that ambiguous contract clause. Where the case ceased to be mundane was when FERC ruled summarily, somewhat extraordinarily, ruled summarily but considered only the extrinsic evidence of one party and refused to consider any of the extrinsic evidence of the other party. That is something that an agency simply may not do. It cannot ignore evidence that is contrary to its position summarily. It can weigh all of the evidence once that evidence is submitted and considered, but it can't just consider one party's evidence and ignore the other party's evidence. This court has held repeatedly that for there to be reasoned decision-making, that it's not arbitrary and capricious, the agency must confront the evidence that is presented. Here, in the first order, the commission doesn't even mention SPP's evidence. In the second order, it acknowledges that SPP submitted evidence and says that it declines to consider it and rules summarily in favor of our opponent. FERC asks this court for deference as an agency under Chevron principles. But this court does not grant deference to an agency that does not confront the evidence. It has an obligation to confront that evidence. I want to do two things this morning. I want to tell you about the evidence that was not considered, and then I want to tell you about the evidence that FERC relied on, this so-called course of conduct evidence, that it said excused it from having to consider any other evidence. And I will demonstrate to you that the course of conduct actually never took place. And that's what happens sometimes when you rule summarily. You make mistakes like that. But first, let me address the evidence that SPP tried to submit and have considered, but that was not considered. The contract clause that had to be interpreted said if the parties, meaning the Midwest ISO and SPP, have contract paths to the same entity, the combined contract path capacity will be made available for use by both parties. So FERC had to interpret the clause contract paths to the same entity. It found that there was no definition of the term contract path, and therefore it was not plain on its face what contract paths to the same entity meant. Therefore, it considered the context of the clause and the words, and it considered the extrinsic evidence of the Midwest ISO, the course of conduct evidence. But what it failed to consider was the following evidence that SPP presented. First, SPP presented evidence of what two well-respected, recognized trade organizations define the term contract path to mean. And in that evidence, we show that the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, NERC, which is the reliability standards administrator of the industry, said that a contract path is an agreed path between parties to an interchange transaction. And NERC defines an interchange transaction as an energy exchange between two balancing authority areas. It is undisputed in this case that once Entergy joins the Midwest ISO, which is occurring on December 19th, 2013, there will be a single balancing authority area that comprises both Entergy and MISO. There will not be an energy exchange between two balancing authority areas. There will be exchanges within a single balancing area authority, and that's not how NERC defines a contract path. We also presented evidence from the North American Electric Standards Board, the industry standard setting agency. It defines a contract path as between contiguous transmission service providers. There will not be two contiguous transmission service providers here. It is undisputed that there will be one transmission service provider, the Midwest ISO. FERC did not consider any of this evidence, and this evidence bears directly on what the term contract path means. Even more importantly, we submitted an affidavit of the chief negotiator of SVP regarding what it understood the term contract path to mean at the time of the negotiations. And it said that it believed it meant contract paths to a third party, not paths within a single party. It meant transmitting energy from MISO to a third party. And FERC said, we're not going to consider that. We decline to consider. It's not like they considered it and weighed the evidence. They just declined to consider it summarily after the filing of a petition and the filing of an answer. No discovery, nothing, no process at all. This court has said, in a case cited both by us and by FERC, Cajun versus FERC, the government claims that this case stands for the proposition that it should be given deference of its interpretation under Chevron standards. But what this case also said is the following. We look to the background of negotiations to help resolve contractual ambiguity. The court went on to say the contract in that case, the contract language is ambiguous, and the commission should have inquired further by permitting petitioner to put in evidence of the negotiating background. Well, FERC did not permit that here. It precluded us from putting in that evidence. It declined to consider it, said repeatedly it would decline to consider our evidence. And the negotiating background here, we have the direct testimony of an affiant who is the chief negotiator for SPP. That is plainly background of the negotiations. And we have the trade usage evidence, which formed the backdrop of when the parties entered into this contract, what the common understanding of this ambiguous term contract path means.
Well, as I understand FERC's view, they thought that from the language of the contract and from the 2009 transaction, that that's all that was needed here.
The course of conduct transaction.
Right. Let me
address the course of conduct transaction because that's the other point I wanted to address. And they said that's all they needed. Well, first let me say, even if they think that would outweigh other evidence that is presented, they need to address and confront the evidence. So they can't just say it would outweigh it because they never considered it. Yeah. And we know they didn't consider it because there's nothing in the order discussing the trade usage evidence. But the danger of a summary ruling is you get the facts wrong. So you'll note in the commission's orders that there's no citation to the record about this course of conduct. So one wonders what they relied on, and we dug into what was filed to find out what that was. There is a single sentence in the petitioner's petition for declaratory letter that says that in at least one instance in the past, Section 5.2, the disputed provision, was used. And FERC says, in the past, MISO used SPP's capacity under Section 5.2. And the intervener says in its brief here that it was used for 122 days, trying to show a persistent course of conduct. But what we need to do is take a look at what actually was said in the attached affidavit, which is the only evidence of the record about the course of conduct. It is one paragraph of one affidavit in a 100-page petition. And that affidavit appears at the joint appendix, pages 84 and 85. And here is all that it says. It says that MISO held previous discussions with SPP on the use of Section 5.2 when the direct interface between MISO and a third party was out of service. MISO didn't seek in this proceeding to use SPP's system when their interconnection with a third party was out of service. It's not seeking permission to use SPP's system when the line is out of service, and it's not seeking permission to use the line to a third party. And it was just a discussion. It wasn't an actual course of conduct. It went on to say in that discussion that what MISO was seeking during that discussion in the past, in 2009, was the ability to reach some internal MISO load that was sitting on the third party's system. It had a contract with that third party, but it says in its affidavit, we needed a contract path, and it uses those words, to reach that third party in order to use that third party's transmission service. When it had a direct interconnection, a line in service, which it has, it had that contract path, but it said, when the line is out of service, and it says it's right in the affidavit, we need an alternative contract path, and therefore we ask SPP if in the future we can use Section 5.2.
I'm sorry, isn't the key thing in this transaction that SPP has no contract path to Ameren?
The Commission says that it is not, as we contend, transmission service to a third party, because once it gets to the third party, it goes on to get to MISO's internal load that sits on the third party.
The contract path that SPP provided in this case did not go.
That's correct.
To Ameren.
That's correct. SPP has no interconnection with that particular piece of Ameren load in question whatsoever. So it could not have been using Section 5.2. You'll see in the affidavit as well a discussion that there was a transmission line outage in 2009, as you mentioned, Your Honor, in the spring of 2009, and it lasted for 122 days. It then says in the fall of 2009 and in the winter of 2010, MISO approached SPP to discuss what would happen the next time that happened. So no actual course of conduct, either before the discussion or after the discussion. A single sentence in the brief, in the petition of the applicant before FERC, and all of that, first of all, it supports SPP's position. It was service to a third party, not to MISO's internal load in the prior conduct. So if anything, the course of conduct that they discussed, possibly implementing, supports SPP's position. But in any event, that single discussion between the parties, no actual course of conduct, FERC got that wrong because they ruled summarily without investigating. Those two things can't possibly be the only evidence that the Commission can rely on in this case. And that piece of evidence precludes consideration of the North American Electric Reliability Corporation's definition of contract path, the North American Electric Standards Board's definition of contract path, and the evidence of the chief negotiator for SPP. I'd like to reserve the last 2 minutes for my rebuttal if there are no further questions.
You may. Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Carol Banta for the Commission. Just want to begin with the question of the service in 2009. My understanding all along has been that it did, in fact, happen over that 122-day period, and I'm not aware of having seen it argued before today that that was just a discussion and that the service didn't actually happen.
Did it have anything to do with 5.2?
Right. And the commission, in its orders, the petitioner has argued all along that the commission misunderstood the meaning of that performance. And the commission said, no, it understood that the energy went through SPP to Entergy and to Ameren. But the relevance of it as...
Well, actually, that sentence is a statement, right? At least under normal English grammar rules, your clause through SPP to Entergy and Ameren is not correct. It went through SPP to Entergy, period, full stop. Not correct?
No, as a factual matter, it went through Entergy to Ameren. Whether then, SPP had any...
Yes, but the contract path provided took it only to Entergy, right? Contract path provided by SPP.
That's right. But it was used then to go to Ameren, and the significance of that in the commission's view. To take a step back, the SPP argues that as long as Entergy Arkansas is a separate third party, 5.2 applied, but if and when Entergy Arkansas became a member of the Midwest ISO, then 5.2 would no longer apply. So the commission was looking at the language, and it started with the meaning of entity, which SPP has said they're not disputing. But when they talk about to a third party, they are disputing what entity means. So the commission looked at that. The commission then looked at what contract path means. And that's where the course of performance came in, because SPP's interpretation of 5.2 is that contract path necessitates, it means point-to-point transmission sale to a third party. And the commission said...
I'm sorry,
the
sale?
Well, it's used
it
to make...
Transmission. I thought we were talking about transmission.
For the purpose of delivering to a third party. A point-to-point transmission service as opposed to network service. SPP made that distinction that it wasn't about network service to part of the network load.
Right.
It was about a point-to-point transmission service.
Right.
And the commission said...
And the transmission to Arkansas Energy was point-to-point to a completely separate entity, right?
But it wasn't an isolated...
Am I right on that? If I'm wrong on that, tell me.
Could you say it again? I'm sorry.
The transmission to Arkansas Energy was a point-to-point transmission to a separate entity.
I believe it was point-to-point, but rather than being part of a particular sale transaction or a particular point-to-point transaction, it was used over a course of 122 days to serve network load and network service.
Okay,
the commission used that differently.
But the pathway was simply to Arkansas Energy, period. That's it.
Right.
Contract path provided by SPP.
But when we're looking at 5.2 and the limitation that SPP believes has to be put on 5.2, it can only be when the two operators have contract paths, point-to-point transmission paths, as they interpret it, to a third party. The Midwest ISO was, in fact, using its contract path was to get to its network load, or that the service that it used that provision for was serving network load over an extended period of time rather than making a particular defined point-to-point transaction.
Setting aside this debate about that, what about the petitioner's other argument that, regardless, this doesn't qualify under the restatement as course of performance evidence at all because it didn't involve repeated occasions, but just a single event?
I have several answers to that. One is that it is the only performance under 5.2 at all. It's not one outlier in...
But the restatement is very clear. It says does not apply to action on a single occasion. Whether it's the only one or not sort of proves the point that under the restatement it doesn't qualify.
Actually, and if we're looking at the section that we first saw in the reply brief, so of course we did not have a chance to respond to that, but our response to the section that had been previously cited is the same. If we look at 202, and especially at that comment G that that SPP cited in its reply brief, that's true if you're trying to modify. If you're trying to show a modification of what the contract appears to say based on the course of performance being different, then of course, to carry that weight, it has to be more than one outlier incident. Mm-hmm. In this case, the commission relied principally on its examination of the language within 5.2, and its context within a seams agreement between regional operators. It looked to the course of performance evidence only as confirmation of what it had printed. This does not hinge entirely on what happened in 2009. The commission didn't look at that and say, that's it, and that's all we've got, and that's good.
But the commission stopped there and didn't go to usage of trade.
It did, because
the Delaware Code says you need to, and the restatement says you need to. So what's the explanation for that?
The explanation for that, again, having started with the language and the context before even getting to the order of preference in the restatement, the commission believe that it had enough, that it had looked at the language, because it started with the language and it came to its conclusion from the language and then saw the course of performance as confirming that. And while the commission certainly can work its way down the order of preference.
So they can stop anywhere along that list and say we've had enough, we don't need to look at the next?
Well, if it finds that the language, of course, which is always the first thing, and then the most significant of the items in the order of preference confirm what it says with the language, the commission can. We're not aware of any case that mandates that the commission check off every box in the restatement. And there are certain cases, that the Colorado Interstate Gas case, where the commission found the usage of trade evidence to be particularly useful in that case. And the court said, that's good, and that makes it reasonable.
The commission didn't look at usage of trade in this case, right?
It didn't, because the usage of trade is the last in the order.
Yeah.
It is
what
the least.
What would it have found if it had looked at the usage of trade?
Because the commission didn't say, I can't tell you. I don't know. But I do know that the commission, that it is at the bottom of the hierarchy. And the commission, again, while looking to the usage of trade in a case like Colorado Interstate Gas, is enough to support the commission's reasonable interpretation under the deference in Chevron Step 2. I'm not aware of any case that requires, that prescribes that the commission must go step by step through each and check off the boxes of each. In one case, it may find some evidence more relevant than others, but
let's assume, theoretically, there's some high-level item for 11, classic for 11, that is just overwhelmingly in favor of one interpretation. Let's assume that in that case, the commission or other, you're not acting differently from a court here, commission or a court, could stop there. But I have some question about even that, but where the highest echelon type of parole evidence is distinctly inconclusive, the idea of stopping there seems very odd. And I haven't seen anything adduced in the briefs that would support that.
Well, again, the commission saw it as confirming what it had already concluded from the language. And
I thought it was acknowledged that the language is ambiguous. What is it?
No, it definitely acknowledged the language.
Did you find support for the court's commission's view?
Well, beginning with the first order, and I did not mean...
No, just take me through the language. I'm here trying to...
First of all, the looking at entity and the fact that entity is not limited to third parties. There's nothing in the language or the way it's used elsewhere in the contract. And again, I'm not suggesting a plain meaning interpretation. When I say that the commission looked at the language, I mean it absolutely treated this as an ambiguous contract, but you can still begin by looking at the language, and that's what the commission did. So I want to be clear, we're not asserting a plain meaning argument at all. But in the first order is largely where it addressed entity and looked at that word, because we're talking about contract path to an entity. So we started with entity and didn't see the limitation that SPP has consistently said, well, that has to be third-party entity. The commission didn't find that in the word entity. So then we go to contract path.
The commission never addressed the point that under its view, an ISO can be said to have a contract path to itself, which is a little odd.
Well, but even within the ISO, when it looked at the word entity and it talked about operating entities, it said the transmission owners within the ISO can still be entities in this contract. So it did look at that and say...
So it does mean an ISO has a contract path to itself.
Well, it has... That's where looking at the word contract, the commission next went to the word contract path and looked... And in particular, I'm looking at paragraph 62 on JA304, and then it's repeated in paragraph 19 on JA381. But when I'm looking, there's various places in the record, at the complete provision, which is on JA280, which is earlier in the first of the orders. The first sentence says contract paths to the same entity. And then the provision goes on to say this will not create new contract paths. SPP will not be able to deal directly with companies with which it does not physically or contractually interconnect, and the same for MISO. And the commission said when you look at that, and it says physically or contractually interconnect, I'll show you where the commission really goes to this on page 19 or paragraph 19 on JA381, where the commission says it doesn't talk about a contract. It uses the term contract path, which is never defined, but then it talks about physical or contractual interconnection. And so the commission said in this context, the term contract path is sufficiently broad to encompass a physical or contractual interconnection capacity. And the commission said, if section 5, in paragraph 19, if section 5.2 were only to apply to companies with which both SPP and MISO have point-to-point contract paths, there would be no need to refer to physical interconnections. So the commission was trying to give meaning to the entire section by seeing that there was a reference to something that was not just contractual. And that's where it came. And again, it is ambiguous, and you could plausibly read it.
Let me ask you, was SPP physically or contractually connected to the Ameren load in 2009?
No, not to the Ameren load.
No, okay.
And again, I think as we tried to emphasize in our brief, we understood that the course of performance that confirmed the reading from the language and context as being about the type of service, that it wasn't just a one-time point-to-point transmission, but it was an ongoing usage to serve network load over a rather extended period of time. But again, the commission did not begin with the course of performance or hinge its entire interpretation on that. So when you look at how the commission looked closely at what entity means, what contract path means, as it's used within 5.2, it is ambiguous, but the commission fully explained what we submit as a reasonable interpretation of that. And under Chevron Step 2, that's what it was obligated to do. I do want to add, just on course of dealing, while the commission said we don't have to go to that, which is the middle tier in the order of preference, it did make... An alternative, even if we did look at it, and it did point out the commission was pretty familiar with the backstory of this provision and the PJM joint operating agreement, that it had very strongly encouraged SPP to adopt when SPP needed a seams agreement and wasn't and didn't have one. So the PJM agreement's a public tariff, and there are a series of commission orders discussing that. So the commission was not relying on what one party said or another party said. It was quite familiar with the seams agreement issues.
Okay.
You haven't said anything about standing. Are you still, is it still the commission's position that the petitioner lacks standing?
Yes.
In the intervener's brief at page 4, they cite our decision in telephone and data systems versus FCC. How do you distinguish that case?
The intervener's? Wait, which brief? I'm sorry.
Telephone and data systems versus FCC.
Oh, the intervener supporting petitioners?
Yeah.
And what page? Because I don't remember seeing that case.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
But
sorry.
Okay.
I mean, I guess I shouldn't put stuff in footnotes, right? I actually agree.
I
agree with you about that. But
anyway,
notice this one.
Okay, and I will say with the interveners, yeah. I was focused more on the fact that the commission had found all of their issues about the impacts to be beyond the scope of its orders. So we certainly believe that standing is a problem for both petitioners and interveners, but the interveners had more.
Thank you. I think Mr. Spector had reserved his time. So.
Oh, I believe Mr. Tengler
has. Oh, I'm sorry, there's an intervener. My apologies. Sorry.
Your Honor, Steve Typer from MISO. We submit this is basically a Chevron case. If the language is unambiguous, the commission's determination is unassailable. If it is ambiguous, it has to be sustained if it is reasonable.
Which one is this?
What's that?
Which one is this?
Well, it's a little unclear, but we think both.
You think this language is clear?
Below, both SPP
Wait,
and
how
MISO.
Can it be both?
What?
How can it be both?
Both of us?
It's either clear or it's ambiguous.
Well,
no,
the ambiguity, if you will, is the commission never said in its order whether it found the language to be.
I was asking you what you thought.
I think it's unambiguous.
You think it's what?
Unambiguous. And Mr. Spector, in his initial brief, said it was unambiguous. Uh-huh. We just took diametrically opposite views of what unambiguous language meant.
Uh-huh. A bad sign for
unambiguous. that is true. But you know, simply because you disagree with what language means doesn't make it ambiguous. But here it is conclusive because SPP in its reply brief, or initial brief, said that both interpretations, MISO's and its own, were permissible. The commission chose a permissible construction of 5.2.
Well, that's the kind of language we usually use when language is ambiguous. If it's ambiguous,
well, that's what
they chose
the second
permissible
state.
Instruction. That suggests you don't think it's clear and ambiguous.
Well, unfortunately, the commission was not quite as clear as it could be.
Just asking you why you thought this language was unambiguous. Don't respond to me by citing what the petitioner thought, what the commission thought. You stood up and said you thought this language was unambiguous.
I do.
Yeah, okay, so why?
Because there's only two phrases at issue, entity and we have an entity.
Yeah.
The SPP says entity disappears when it goes into a RTO. It does not. It is the same entity, whether it is a member of an RTO
but
the or
real
outside.
Issue is over contract DAF. I mean, yeah.
Well, that again.
And that's a clear phrase to you?
Both SPP and MISO agreed that contract path may mean physical or contractual linkage. There is no ambiguity there. Mm-hmm. So I submit that under Chevron, once the commission came up with a permissible interpretation of 5.2, it didn't have to be the best interpretation. It didn't need to be the only interpretation of 5.2. But once it did, its order is entitled to Chevron deference and should be withheld.
What justifies the commission stopping at the parole evidence that it likes?
Assuming it got that right.
What is it that justifies the commission stopping at the parole evidence that it likes?
Well, I think it resorted to parole evidence, just confirmatory, that its interpretation of the language was the correct one. And we had a course of performance that underlined that in SPP. We had course of performance under a similar clause in PJM. So no one had ever raised the issue until Entergy decided to join MISO. And then all of a sudden it became an issue. So I think the commission simply relied on course of performance in a confirmatory manner and not a decisional type circumstance.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Okay. Now, Mr. Spector.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You did save your time.
Yes, I did. Thank you. Regarding this last point about permissible constructions, that's what happens after the commission considers all of the extrinsic evidence, not just one side's extrinsic evidence.
Do you have authority for the proposition that you need to consider all of the factors in the code and the restatement, that you have to look at usage of trade?
I'm not saying that the commission has to address every piece of evidence that is submitted in every case that it decides.
That's not my question. So you're relying on the Delaware Code says you're supposed to look at certain extrinsic evidence. Restatement of contracts says, is that a list that you're supposed to check the box off, or can you go through and say, you know, we've looked at course of performance, that's enough. We don't need now to look at usage.
I don't think you can stop. I don't think a federal agency can stop.
Are there cases that say that?
I do not, Your Honor, but I have cases saying that you have to, many cases that this court has rendered, that says you have to confront the serious probative evidence that is submitted by the position that is contrary to the position that the agency is adopting. And they didn't confront the trade usage evidence at all, not mentioned it one bit. And in this case, where the commission says contract path is undefined, so we've got to figure out from some other way what contract path means. In this case, trade usage is critical. We have two trade organizations that define contract path. They have a list of definitions in their rules, and they define contract path. Contract doesn't define contract path. The commission doesn't know what contract path means. This evidence is very probative. We also have an affidavit of the chief negotiator from SPP of what he thought contract path meant in this contract. In the Cajun case that I mentioned before, this court told FERC that they had erred when they didn't consider the affidavit of a third party, not even the contracting parties. It was the Rural Electrification Agency had an affidavit that was not considered about what they had told Cajun they should negotiate. That was a third party. We have evidence from the party that negotiated. The commission said we declined to consider it. The one other thing I wanted to mention about the commission's argument, that it said even if we had considered the evidence, we have this other contract with PJM and MISO that should have made SPP know what this contract was going to mean. And they say we had a series of orders about that other contract. Well, take a look at the citations that the commission has, both in its brief and in its order. You will never find a mention anywhere in those cases about this contract sharing provision. This is a buried, obscure provision in a massive joint operating agreement that was principally about reliability practices, exchange of data and information, making sure the markets that abut each other work together. It was not about contract path sharing. You will find nothing in any of those orders that discuss contract path sharing. What the commission does cite is MISO's affidavit about what they do with PJM. If you look at SPP's affidavit, it says, we didn't know that when we negotiated this contract. So they had nothing to go on from information from MISO. They had nothing to go on from information from FERC about what this provision means. And now the commission says, you should have known. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Case submitted.